CNN Radio, I'm Jim Ribble. Leading the news, President Obama is set to sign the Wall Street Reform Bill into law this hour. CNN's Bob Costantini tells us it's being called the most sweeping change in the financial regulatory system since the 1930s.
It would crack down on practices that some experts say forced the government to intervene in Wall Street affairs to avoid an even worse recession. And the measure would allow Uncle Sam to break up any company deemed too big to fail.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says he'll review the case of a former Ag Department official who resigned after a video clip surfaced of her discussing a white farmer. Shirley Sherrod, an African-American, resigned this week under pressure after that video appeared on a conservative website. Sherrod gives us her reaction to Vilsack taking a second look at her case.
But to have them come forth now to say they're willing to do that, I guess it's sort of bittersweet for me.
Sherrod says she's not even sure she'd go back if her old job is offered to her. The Taliban launched attacks in a northern Afghan province today and beheaded six police officers after a long firefight. CNN's Atiyah Abawi reports that the group has certainly not shied away from barbarity before.
After the elections, we do know of incidents where they chopped the fingers off of Afghans who had ink-stained fingers, because when you go to vote here in Afghanistan, you have to stick your finger in a bottle of ink so you can't vote again.
The U.S. announces more sanctions against North Korea. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton says it's not too late for the North to change its tune.
North Korea can halt its provocative behavior, take irreversible steps to fulfill its denuclearization commitments, and comply with international law.
A Chicago auction house next month will sell some of the embalming tools and other articles associated with Elvis Presley's death. They include his toe tag, but it doesn't say the king. It just says John Doe. For news anytime, go to CNN.com. This is CNN Radio.
Ford and Lincoln Mercury Service presents Mike Rowe talking about how hot he is.
Let's talk about something else.
I'm talking about the summer heat, Mike. It's tough on cars.
Right. What do you recommend?
Well, right now you can buy four Goodyear, Continental, Yokohama, Hankook, or Pirelli tires and get a $100 cash rebate. How about that, Mike?
All right. That is hot.
Told you. Ford and Lincoln Mercury Service. See participating dealership or visit genuineservice.com for mail-in rebate and details through 83110.
Very cool.
Nate, technician for Safelite Auto Glass.
My customer had a tiny chip in his windshield. Yesterday, he got in his hot car, cranked up the AC, and crack! It spread. If only he'd called Safelite sooner. When a chip's small, we can usually repair it in just a half hour. With our state-of-the-art resin, a Safelite repair is so reliable, we guarantee it for life. And with most insurance plans, there's no cost to you.
Let Safelite handle the insurance claim for you. Just call 1-800-800-2727.
Safelite Repair, Safelite Replace.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics.
If you're being fitted for a suit, building a deck, or aiming a rocket ship, don't let anybody associated with Congress do the measuring or the math. This is Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike Causey. The reason for that's obvious. Politicians, people who work for them, lobbyists, and pressure groups have their own form of math. Each is adept at proving that doing things their way will either save the taxpayers tons of money, or if they oppose the scheme du jour, it will bankrupt the nation. And nowhere is that math gap better illustrated than in teleworking, especially for 300,000-plus G-men and women in the Washington area. The House and Senate have each approved separate expanded telework bills that would let people work from home. Backers say it would save $11 billion a year. Opponents say it would cost $30 million over the next 5 years. Big difference. The bill also spells out who will never, ever be able to telecommute. And are you on that list? Check out my column, Mike Causey's Federal Report, at federalnewsradio.com.
Imagine being alerted to a potential threat before it happens. This Thursday, hear how government agencies from around the world are making this a reality by sharing information in real time and proactively addressing the world's toughest problems: cybersecurity, security breaches, and foiling terrorist activity. Join TIBCO Software at the Grand Hyatt Washington. You'll experience hands-on how you can make this a reality for your organization. Space is limited. Register today at now.tibco.com. That's now.tibco.com.
The Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com explores the hard issues surrounding cloud computing from the government's perspective, sharing with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the Fed Cloud blog on Twitter, sponsored by Intel and Cisco. Two technology companies leading the cloud revolution.
Everybody needs money. That's why they call it money.
The best things in life are free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I need money.
From Fool Global Headquarters, this is Motley Fool Money.
Welcome to Motley Fool Money. Thanks for being here. I'm your host, Chris Hill, and I'm joined by Motley Fool senior analysts Seth Jason, James Early, and Shannon Zimmerman. Guys, good to see you.
Good to see you, Chris.
On this week's show, a big announcement from Apple, big earnings from Intel, and a big financial reform bill. Really big. 2,300 pages big. Plus three stocks on our radar and one reason why you don't mess with Texas. But we begin with the financial reform bill, which Congress passed this week. The bill establishes an independent consumer protection agency within the Fed, gives the government new power to seize and shut down troubled financial institutions, and sets up a council of federal regulators to watch out for threats. Derivatives will be subject to government oversight, and we've got new restrictions on proprietary trading and hedge fund activity. James Early, obviously, there's a lot there. It's a massive bill. What got your attention?
Well, Chris, I'm going to go through one by one. I would say the biggest thing is derivatives, which sounds boring, but the world has $200 trillion in financial assets, but $600 trillion in derivatives outstanding on those same financial assets. So it is really the elephant in the room.
All of it completely necessary.
Exactly, exactly. And it's basically four or five top banks that do all the derivatives trading in the U.S. And one thing that I saw was that it looked like the banks were going to have to spin off their swap desks, and swaps are a form of derivatives, and come to find out that's not going to happen. Basically, swaps that deal with interest rates or with gold or precious metals are exempted, and that's 80% or more of swaps. So these are swaps that get to stay on these bank balance sheets. In other words, they're still sort of too big to fail in that regard. Nothing has changed. The banks won. They get to keep the higher risk, higher reward proposition here.
I'm not Shannon, but
you'll approximate.
You got play one in response to this question.
Well, that's the problem with when they try to make these reforms is they get hung up on, say, a type of derivative, and they write rules or they write guidelines on what you should do with it. And instead, the idea here is, listen, there are valid uses for derivatives and swaps, which is hedging risk. We need to create guidelines so that continues to happen, but get rid of all the derivative gambling. And so this is what happened in the past. They get hung up on the letters of the law, and they miss the big picture.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And as we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, you know, it's an impressive piece of legislation. I guess it required gigantic blue boxes to store the whole thing and bring it over to the White House. But the devil is in the details, and the details will be written not by Congress but by the regulators. How are they going to interpret these things? And so even I know James was a big fan of the transparency of the derivatives trading.
Yeah.
Well, you know, how long traders can wait before they disclose the prices, that's in play. So if it's immediate, that could be transparent. If it's 30 days, then that's next to meaningless. And the stage has been set to water down even the derivatives piece, as James was just alluding to. You know, at one point, and I thought that the derivatives piece was the proxy for how serious the reform would be. It doesn't seem that serious to me if that's going to be backed out, because having the banks spin off their derivative units, which are little printing presses of money for them, that's not going to happen, and that's too bad.
And even on the transparency, in terms of putting derivatives on exchanges, it's the SEC now who gets the decision printed to them to decide if a derivative is, quote, standardized enough to put on exchanges.
And the SEC, even if you think they're good at what they do, and I don't, they're certainly, they don't have the staff to do it all anyway.
Oh, but they're about to get a bigger staff.
They'll have to wake up somebody there to get them to pay attention here.
So, I mean, was this a situation where it was almost inevitable that Wall Street was going to find a way around this?
No, absolutely. All that talk about financial innovation, they innovate for themselves.
Yeah, just as a quick example, the way the bill reads, there's a swap push-out rule. This is what we're talking about. It says banks with swap dealers won't get federal assistance, which sounds so bad, but the only swaps that it applies to are like less than 1%. These are like pork bellies and soybean oil.
And even the administration knows this. Larry Summers is out saying, you know, this is an important piece of legislation, but how important it is really going to be down to the regulators, not us.
Yeah.
Apple's problems with the iPhone 4 got taken to a new level on Friday. At a press conference, Steve Jobs referred to the ongoing reception troubles as AntennaGate and offered free cases to everyone who owns an iPhone 4. Shannon Zimmerman, anytime you've achieved gate status, that's just not a good thing.
Wow.
And did he confer it on himself? Is that the way that it worked?
Yeah, he was up there talking about antenna gate.
Well, I thought there wasn't an antenna problem. You just hold the phone differently and you're all set. I mean, this is the obvious thing to have done a while ago. They came out with a firmware fix that made it clear that they were over-reporting the signal strength to begin with, but that was a head fake. That wasn't the real problem. Consumer Reports comes out and says, oh, lo and behold, we do think there's a hardware problem here. 48 hours later, 72 hours later, Steve Jobs, who does not like to admit error, is there and said, here's your free prophylactic for your
and
for your
really
iPhone.
And didn't admit much error at the press conference. Right. It began with, oh, the phone is great, people love it, et cetera, et cetera. And then the thing I don't get is that he wants to be denying that this is a hardware problem, and essentially for folks who are behind the curve on this, the outside of the case forms a couple of different two or three antennas, and if you bridge those antennas with your fingers and you are nice and electrically conductive, you screw up the signal.
Right.
So that's why having the condom on the phone can help with that. So he's on the one hand saying, here's this thing that will fix the problem, but before they did that, they showed video of other phones and changing hand positions to try to claim that all phones had the same problem. Well, these are phones that have internal antennas. So it's a completely different issue. So Steve's mincing words. At least they're sort of doing the right thing. But it's still a really weird episode in Apple's history.
So as long as you hold it with tongs, you're in the clear.
Yeah, well, yeah. Rubber gloves, dishwashing gloves would work too.
It is weird, but it's sort of thematically correct with the whole passive-aggressive stance that he manages with.
Yeah, I'm disappointed. They were censoring negative comments on their discussion boards, Apple was, you know, about this Consumer Reports stuff. So to me, that goes a little too far under the cult status.
Shannon, a couple of weeks ago, you said on the air, you were rushing out to buy your iPhone 4.
I was foiled by the fact that I could not pre-order and go into the Apple store that's nearby in the Pentagon City Mall. They said, oh, dude, come back, you know, in two or three weeks and maybe. So it slowed me down, and I'm kind of happy now. So I don't have to, I guess they're going to refund everybody who paid the $29 for the case, but I don't have to go through that. And I'll wait for a while and see if anything else comes out that Consumer Reports doesn't like.
The new scandal here is the rip-off prices for those cases. $30 for a case that they estimate costs. It's actually about $1 to give people,
and apparently a rubber band will work too if you just stretch it around. Seriously, will stretch if you stretch it around your phone.
Anything duct tape is what Consumer Reports recommended, actually,
but it's not aesthetically correct.
You're listening to Motley Fool Money. We're going through some of the big stories of the week. Potentially good news on the BP front. At the time of this taping, the Gulf well remained capped, but there's some ambiguity about pressure levels in the well, and that could require BP to reopen the well. Seth Jason, we don't know if the well is capped for good or just capped for now, but you took a lot of heat this week. You wrote something for Fool.com, and the headline was Obama's Gusher in the Gulf.
Yeah, people didn't get it. I was talking about a gusher of ego. That was partly a failure of the way we format our articles online. And I was talking about the moratorium, which I still think is an ego-based policy decision, and it's completely arbitrary with an end date that has no bearing to reality on whether or not they will know enough at that point to make drilling safe. And I think that it's just bad for the Gulf economy for them to make decisions like that. But to get back to BP, I think that this is a pretty interesting development. BP is finally, I actually heard a couple of good comments in the press about BP. I thought hell had frozen over when I heard those. They came on public radio.
Wow.
But yeah. But this is pretty good news, and of course now they're testing the well right now, trying to figure out if the well itself is cracked, so that, in other words, if you cap the top on this thing but there's too much pressure and there's cracks in the sides, the oil will find its way out somewhere else. But the good news is they should be able to siphon off the oil without losing much if this cap holds, and that should give them enough time to get the relief wells done. And then, of course, there's the long cleanup process. But this is pretty good news.
But this is a temporary step, right? It's the relief well that's going to really solve the problem.
Yeah, well, they want to be able to kill the well from there. So,
right. Does it go without saying that the stock is going to benefit once the well is capped?
Well, today, this week has been a bad week for stocks at the end of the week. And so, I don't know that you can say the stock will go up from here for sure. But I think the worst is over for BP unless something else unforeseen.
We still
happens.
Don't know whether they're going to be billed for the damages, though. I think that's a big wild card.
Well, I think the $20 billion they've already set aside is probably adequate. But
and they're two installments that they've already paid.
I think the tap could go up.
Absolutely.
Coming up, Intel surprises and Google disappoints. Stay right here. You're listening to Motley Fool Money.
This is an urgent investor alert. Warning, the personal computer is dead. A revolutionary technology has made the personal computer totally obsolete. Want to hear something even more surprising? 70% of Americans are already using this incredible technology. Merrill Lynch calls it a $160 billion tsunami. IBM, Yahoo, and Amazon are racing to cash in, but two little-known companies have beat them to the punch. Get the full details of this incredible investment opportunity and the names and ticker symbols of these two companies. Go to pcfuneral.com for a new free report called The Death of the PC. This free report is brought to you by The Motley Fool, the authority The Economist calls an ethical oasis. Again, you'll get the names and ticker symbols of two companies that are changing the way the world looks at the personal computing industry. You'll also receive our comprehensive full analysis of these potential investments. Get your free report now. Go to pcfuneral.com. Once again, that's pcfuneral.com. No credit card required. Go to pcfuneral.com today.
What will happen to your hard-earned wealth after you die? How do you protect your assets for your family? Will your heirs squander it away? Will creditors and predators try to take it away from your loved ones? At Zell Law, our goal is to give you peace of mind in planning for your retirement and beyond by helping you construct the best life and estate plans customized to your needs. Find out what you need to know on Blueprint for Wealth. Join me, Wayne Zell, Saturdays at 10 a.m. right here on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. The right technology, right away. Here's Joseph Grace, President and CEO of Grace Associates, on the Cyber Warfare Prevention, Securing Your Software and Applications panel, sponsored by Fortify Software.
There's going to be interagencies that are working together, whether you have FEMA working with medical, working with National Guard. As these things come online and they start communicating in a cloud environment, there has to be some kind of tool that takes a look at the people coming in. Are they safe? Are they secure? Can we actually let them look at our information? Can we share the information back? There's an operational demand for that.
To listen to the program made possible by Fortify Software in its entirety, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
On May 20th of 2010, Vivek Kundra released the State of Public Cloud Computing Report. It states that as we move to the cloud computing environment, we must ensure standards are in place that protect the privacy of our citizens and safeguard our national security interests. Fortify Software can help you unlock the benefits of the cloud while allowing you to feel safe about the security of your applications. Find the vulnerabilities inside your software. Fix them quickly and cost-effectively. Fortify your applications with security. Visit Fortify.com.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down walls and enabling face-to-face communication regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg, now a part of Cisco, developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at breakdownthewalls.com.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
We've all got money questions. Will I have enough to retire when I want? Am I saving enough for my kids' college education? When should I start taking Social Security? How can I help my aging parents with their finances? Is it too late to refinance my mortgage? The Garrett Planning Network can help you answer all of these questions and more. The Garrett Planning Network is a group of more than 300 fee-only financial planners and advisors. They're independent, they don't work on commission, and you won't be turned away just because you're not wealthy. It's pay-as-you-go, as-needed financial advice on your terms. So whether you're looking for a comprehensive financial plan or just a second opinion, your local Garrett planner can help. And for a limited time, listeners of the show can get a free Get Acquainted meeting and a 10% discount. Just mention The Motley Fool when you contact them. To learn more, go to GarrettPlanningNetwork.com. That's with two R's and two T's. GarrettPlanningNetwork.com.
One for the money. Welcome back to Motley Fool Money. Chris Hill here in the studio with Seth Jason, James Early, and Shannon Zimmerman as we dig through some of the companies making headlines this week. Guys, we could be looking at a record year for foreclosures. Seth Jason, you're our housing man in the room. Can you break
down housing bear?
Can you break down the latest numbers?
Hey, I was bearish on housing way before it was cool. I used to get hate mail from mortgage people and for real estate agents about my bearishness on housing.
Bearish when bearish wasn't cool.
You actually wrote a thing for Fortune magazine in, when was that, 2006, 2007?
Yeah, I said that the housing market's collapse might cause an entire recession.
And weren't you on the other side of the Abacus transaction as well?
But I don't think there's much of a doubt that this is going to be a record year for foreclosures, and that's continued bad news if you're interested in home builders. A few weeks ago, or maybe it was months ago, I said I thought the bottom might be in for home builders. I don't think so. When you have another million or so foreclosed homes coming up, which is probably what we'll get, that's a lot of competition for new homes. So this is not a good report.
At all. And just a further confirmation that, you know, this was never a subprime problem to begin with, even though that's the way the kind of reductive financial media wanted to cover it. This is a widespread problem. And if
everybody paying too much for houses.
Exactly.
A new twist in the Toyota unintended acceleration story. The Wall Street Journal reported this week that federal regulators were blaming dozens of the unintended acceleration cases on driver error. On Thursday, a Toyota company spokesperson said the company was, quote, not anywhere near close to reaching a conclusion on what caused the incidents. Seth, what did you make of that?
That's the politically correct thing to say. I don't think they are close, and they don't want to come across as if they know what's going on. But according to what seems like a leaked report, recording data from the cars shows that people who said, hey, this thing was accelerating on its own, had their foot on the accelerator and nothing on the brake. Now, I think that's an open question still. I have not seen this resolved, at least in the press, the technicalities on where that information is recorded in the electronic chain of command there. So if this information comes from the same faulty place that people allege, which is, you know, that the controller was confusing brake with gas, then of course it would be no good. We haven't heard the end of this, but if it turns out that it's driver error, and I think that's always probably the most likely conclusion because it's the simplest, then a lot of us owe Toyota a big apology.
The CEO came over in front of Congress and got his face torn off.
Yeah, and of course they admitted a problem with the gas pedal and with floor mats pinching the gas pedal. But the real scandal here is that they supposedly have not been able to find this electronics flaw that did this. Well, it sounds now like it's possible that there simply is no electronic flaw.
My Prius is buggy, though. I got to say that it does. The brakes get jumpy sometimes, and lights come on and stuff. But I've never had any acceleration.
But in Toyota's defense, James, you're a really bad driver.
I have been sentenced to defensive driving school four times. I'll admit that. That's nothing to do with the Prius.
Final word, Shannon.
Well, yeah, but they have recalled millions of cars. And what's the opposite of a recall? Is it a call? Is that what happens if it turns out not to have been a problem after all?
Time for This Week in Banking. Goldman Sachs agreed to pay a fine of $550 million imposed by the SEC. Plus, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan, and Bank of America all reported quarterly earnings, but the results were mixed depending on which media outlet you were paying attention to. James Early, what did you make of all this?
Well, Chris, the bottom line is the top line, which revenue, basically, which was weak for all these banks. But earnings were kind of mixed, and to your point, I'm looking at a Financial Times headline that says, J.P. Morgan signals end of Wall Street rebound. Investors Business Daily, meanwhile, says J.P. Morgan tops Q2 views as credit trends improve.
So, no wonder people are confused
what are we
out there.
To think?
I prefer the analysis of the peach-colored paper.
Exactly, the Financial Times. I'm going with that. Banks are using, I would say, the worst possible method to juice their earnings, which is to release reserves. In other words, these are cushions for bad times that banks have built up. When they think the coast is clear, they release some of them. I don't think the coast is clear yet, especially after this FAS 157 accounting rollback we talked about last week.
Yeah, where they're not reserving against a lot of likely bad stuff.
Exactly. They have more leeway to keep valuations of these loans, whatever they want. So I'm not jumping in yet.
Yeah, the Goldman Sachs settlement was quite interesting to me. So it's $550 million, which sounds like a lot of money because it is a lot of money, but not to Goldman. It's a drop in the bucket. But perhaps the most ridiculous part of the settlement, which, you know, it's good. They've come and they fessed up implicitly to something, but not to fraud. Although in the settlement with the SEC, they had to agree to ban themselves from committing intentional fraud in the future, which I had always thought banks were prevented from doing that anyway.
It's better if it's on paper, though.
It's all really political. You know, somebody at Goldman did the calculation, which was, listen, we need a lot of patsies to take the opposite side of these trades. And the patsies include, pension funds, small-time pension funds, small cities, et cetera. And they took the opposite side of this trade with Paulson, and they got burned. And Goldman, I think, did the calculus and said, we need to look like we're coming clean, so we'll pay this fine. Otherwise, we lose we lose our pool of patsies for the future.
You're listening to Motley Fool Money. We're going through some of the companies making headlines this week. Intel posted the strongest quarterly result in its 42-year history. Revenue was up 34% with profits of nearly $3 billion. Intel easily beat Wall Street's expectations. Shannon, is this assigned businesses are starting to spend some money on technology?
Absolutely. Intel is, you know, a big player in the industry generally, with consumer products being a part of the demand stream for their chips. But yeah, the big thing is capital spending, and the analysis that I have seen suggests that there is sort of a wave of spending on laptop computers in particular. How long that sustains itself, that will have a big bearing on Intel's future results, and then also the cycle, the replacement cycle, seems to have gotten longer. But for right now, this seems like remarkable news for Intel and also for AMD. I guess you can't really call it its chief rival because it's such a small player relative to Intel, but they had a good quarter too.
Seth?
Earlier this week on Fool.com, I wrote an article called something along the lines of Time to Panic on Consumer Spending, because we had a consumer spending report, and the gist of it was something we've talked about here before, which is that spending on gadgets and computers remains pretty strong, while spending on things like cars, furniture, hardware is pretty weak. So if you're looking to invest where consumers are spending, it's on stuff like computers.
Google's net revenue for the second quarter was over $5 billion, but it wasn't enough for Wall Street. Heavy spending on hiring and R&D meant Google's bottom line results were lower than expected. Shannon, $5 billion in revenue, that's still a huge number. Is Google now at the point where it's just a victim of its own success?
In some ways, because people are looking for it to be, you know, there's all this talk about Google being endlessly inventive, but the one thing that it can't invent is a diversified revenue stream. 97-98% of its revenue comes still from search advertising. And they had some interesting color around that, the way that their customers are having integrated campaigns that run across the web and across mobile devices is quite interesting. But I guess cost per click, that the revenue that they're generating per click, didn't increase as much as analysts were expecting, nor the company itself. Until Google succeeds in making some of these initiatives that are underway now profitable, this is going to continue to be a problem for them.
And finally, Yum Brands' second quarter earnings were down 3.6%, and shares fell on the news. Yum Brands is the parent company of KFC, and on the earnings conference call, Yum's CFO took a shot at our beloved Double Down sandwich.
CFO badmouthed the sandwich?
When he referred to sales of the sandwich as, quote, immaterial. Immaterial! They've sold over 10 million of these things.
That's Wall Street speak for that. It's pretty small.
All right, exit question. What is the next step in the fast food evolution? We've got the Double Down, which has no bun. So what's next, Shannon?
I think they're going to replace cheese just with slices of fat.
James?
Similarly, how about like a stick of lard rolled in salt and sugar, and you just eat that, and it's fried.
Seth?
The problem with the Double Down is the Double Down was two pieces of chicken that formed the bread of the sandwich, correct?
That's right.
They need to fill that with syrup, like the McGriddle.
All of this sounds wonderful. I'm there.
I'm totally there.
Pretty good idea.
Steve Broido, what do you think?
Last week, my wife and I and some friends ate at a restaurant where they served macaroni and cheese lollipops.
Oh.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. The name was a little bit more, it was a little generous. They were just a little bit of macaroni and cheese on a stick. But I think the concept of the lollipop food could be huge.
All right. We'll have to stop there.
The guys especially will be, if you're driving.
Exactly.
With a sharp stick, and it's great for kids.
The guys will be back later in the show to talk about the stocks on their radar, but drop us an email at radio@fool.com, especially if you have any ideas for a sandwich that could trump the Double Down.
Sandwich, sandwich, I'm in love with you. You've got lettuce and tomatoes too. Mayonnaise and cheese, you're the one for me.
Coming up, what can BP do to get its good name back? Why do bags fly free? And why you don't mess with Texas? We'll talk to ad man Roy Spence.
Stick around. You're listening to Motley Fool Money.
This is an urgent investor alert. Warning, the personal computer is dead. A revolutionary technology has made the personal computer totally obsolete. Want to hear something even more surprising? 70% of Americans are already using this incredible technology. Merrill Lynch calls it a $160 billion tsunami. IBM, Yahoo, and Amazon are racing to cash in, but two little-known companies have beat them to the punch. Get the full details of this incredible investment opportunity and the names and ticker symbols of these two companies. Go to pcfuneral.com for a new free report called The Death of the PC. This free report is brought to you by The Motley Fool, the authority The Economist calls an ethical oasis. Again, you'll get the names and ticker symbols of two companies that are changing the way the world looks at the personal computing industry. You'll also receive our comprehensive full analysis of these potential investments. Get your free report now. Go to pcfuneral.com. Once again, that's pcfuneral.com. No credit card required. Go to pcfuneral.com today.
Save money at HalfPriceDC.com with half-price gift certificates to the area's best restaurants, stores, spas, and more.
This week, HalfPriceDC.com has half-price gift certificates to Waggle Golf Pass, a book containing huge golf deals throughout the D.C. metro area.
Blue Ridge Shadows Golf Club in Front Royal, Virginia's most beautiful golf course, ranked fourth in Virginia by Golf Week magazine. And Virginia Oaks Golf Club, Northern Virginia's most memorable and challenging golf course.
See all the offers at HalfPriceDC.com.
Make your dollar go further at Nationals Park. It's the Nats and Braves Tuesday, July 27th through Thursday, the 29th. T-shirt Tuesdays are back and better than ever. Be one of the first 10,000 fans Tuesday, July 27th, and you'll get a free road jersey T-shirt presented by Hard Times Cafe. Don't miss the best pregame happy hour in town with $5 Miller Lite products at the Miller Lite Scoreboard Walk Bar Thursday, July 29th. Visit nationals.com or call 888-632-NATS.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
As a major international conference in Kabul on Afghan security was underway, two U.S. civilians were killed and an Army sergeant injured. U.S. military authorities are investigating what was a shooting at a weapons training area in northern Afghanistan. A prime suspect, an Afghan soldier. This is the second time in a week this type of incidents happened. A renegade soldier killed three members of a British Gurkha regiment before escaping. I'm J.J. Green.
Can you imagine buying a television or vehicle today that you'll still be using in 40 years? Probably not. When the military purchase an airplane, they know it has to last at least that long or longer, and the parts for the airplane may already be obsolete. That's where Airink comes in. Airink helps the DoD plan ahead for parts obsolescence. This planning saves money and lessens the risk of counterfeit parts being used if the original supplier no longer exists. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
It was such a surreal experience to be getting ready for class and then a few hours later being diagnosed with cancer. It's just unbelievable. I was told I had 2.5 years to live.
When John Ivey was diagnosed with cancer, he couldn't afford the medicine he needed.
When it came down to money, it's very devastating. And here's a new drug that's potentially life-saving. And then all of a sudden to be told you can't afford it, you can't have it. I was dying, and I wanted to live.
John contacted Novartis about the medicine he needed.
They told us to just forget about the money portion of it. They basically eliminated that part of the equation and said, let's just get you well. If it wasn't for people like that, people like me wouldn't be here.
Developing new medicines, getting them to the patients who need them. Novartis. Think what's possible.
You know we love talking stocks here on Motley Fool Money, but let's face it, breaking down financial statements, picking stocks, and managing money isn't for everyone. Well, now there's a solution, Motley Fool Independence Fund. Motley Fool Independence Fund is the first actively managed mutual fund to apply the Motley Fool investment philosophy for individual investors to help you build and preserve the long-term wealth you know you deserve. For over 15 years, Motley Fool readers and members have asked the Motley Fool to apply its investment philosophy in a more hands-on fashion. Motley Fool Independence Fund is our heartfelt answer. See how we can help you build and preserve long-term wealth. Go to FoolFunds.com to learn more about the Independence Fund and grab the prospectus MarketWatch says may be the finest prospectus ever. It's time to declare your independence. Go to FoolFunds.com now. Investing involves risk, including the possibility of loss. Please consider the charges, risks, expenses, and investment objectives carefully before you invest. Please see a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before you invest or send money. Motley Fool Funds are distributed by BNY Mellon Distributors.
Inside.
Welcome back to Motley Fool Money. I'm Chris Hill. My guest this week is Roy Spence. He is the chairman and CEO of GSD&M Idea City, one of the most successful marketing communications and advertising companies in America. He's also the best-selling author of It's Not What You Sell, It's What You Stand For. Roy, welcome.
Hey, Chris. Great to talk to you, my friend. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for being here.
How are the fools doing today?
We're doing well.
Great. Yeah.
I want to talk about your book, but first I want to get your thoughts on BP and what's going on there. Obviously, there's been so much that's happened over the last couple of months, and BP for years marketed itself as a different kind of oil company, saying that the BP stood for Beyond Petroleum. This was an oil company that even socially responsible mutual funds would invest in. In your mind, is this an example of a company where the marketing didn't really line up with what the company was doing?
You know, it's a great question, Chris, and I think that the quick question, the answer is I don't know, because I wasn't on the inside of BP, but I do understand. I do have people who were, and I think on one hand there was a company who saw, I think, that after the Exxon spill, there was a belief that within the organization and with all companies that you had to be at some point in your life stewards and responsible for the greater good. But here's the thing that I think stands out to me is that the more this comes out about BP, and again, I only know what I read and what I get from the internet and everything else, is that they had a series of other violations, and I know all companies do. The end story to me is that I don't think BP has a brand anymore. And what I mean by that is, you know, brand is often overused, but to me, a brand is a sacred promise. That's what I call it. Whether it's Southwest, the promise to keep the skies democratized, or Walmart to save you money so you can live better, or the United States Air Force. And their brand promise was they were going to be beyond petroleum. I think they're now just a corporation. And what I mean by that, Chris, is that until they fix their mess, and I know they're trying. Hell, we all know they're trying. Until they fix their mess, I wouldn't be doing all the advertising they're doing. I wouldn't be doing the full-page newspaper ads. They will get credit only when they stop it and they fix it. And that's a long road. They're going to have to earn their way back into this deal. And right now, they're not a brand. They're a corporation, and that makes them vulnerable.
A year from now, or 2 years from now, when the mess is cleaned up and things are relatively back to normal, what does BP need to do to gain trust from investors, consumers, business partners?
First of all, never leave the Gulf Coast after they clean up. If I was them right now, I would move my corporate headquarters to New Orleans. I would say, look, we had a terrible mistake. And by the way, that shouldn't be a condemnation of all offshore drilling or all oil companies. We made a mistake. We didn't do the right thing out there. And the first thing I would do is quit talking about it and make a long-term commitment that they are, once they stop the leak and once they clean up the Gulf, and by the way, that's a long-term program, I would not ever walk away from the people of the Gulf Coast, ever. I would move a corporate headquarters down there. I would move business down there. I would say, folks, we did something. You had nothing to do with this. It wasn't your fault. It was our fault.
You're listening to Motley Fool Money. We're talking with Roy Spence, author of It's Not What You Sell, It's What You Stand For. Roy, the subtitle of your book is Why Every Extraordinary Business is Driven by Purpose. Why does purpose matter for business?
It matters more than ever. And again, Chris didn't know this. This has been a journey for a long time that I've been on. And, you know, from being with Herb Kelleher at Southwest Airlines and Colleen Barrett and Sam Walton and Norm Brink, who started Chili's, and being involved in presidential politics and governing, I found that if you have a purpose beyond making money, you'll make more money. In today's marketplace, it's even more. Purpose is really clearly defined, at least the way we see it. It's the difference you're trying to make in the world. Now, I've been all over the world, and until this winter of economic turmoil, and it is a winter. It's not a recession. It's not a depression. It is a winter, and every generation has one. The last one was World War II and the Great Depression. The one before that was the Civil War. The one before that was the American Revolution. We're in a seasonal generational change. I don't know why our leaders don't get this, both government and in corporate America. This is a sea change. And right now, because of the Internet, because of transparency, companies and organizations who are not in the business of improving people's lives, what is your purpose? Southwest Airlines' purpose is clear. We're in business to give people the freedom to fly. We don't charge for bags. And by the way, we made over $1 billion charging free because our goal is to keep our costs down so we can keep our fares down. So purpose, it's got a lot of traction in corporate America. It has in universities now. If you don't know what difference you're trying to make in the world, and I don't mean that in any ooey-gooey ethereal, if you're not trying to improve people's lives as your core, not as some charity thing, but the core business, if you go out of business, you will not be missed. I don't miss linens and things. I miss the jobs, but if you're not in the business of life improvement, you're not going to be in business. The world has changed. The consumers have left the building. And if your business is not in business to improve their lives, they're not going to spend money with you. That's just the way it's going to be.
Now, Roy, the latest radio station to add our show to their lineup is in Houston, so it's only fitting that we talk about what is maybe your most well-known marketing campaign, and I'm referring to Don't Mess with Texas. What is the story behind that campaign?
The story behind it is a great story. In fact, it has Houston roots because Bob Lanier, who used to be the great mayor of Houston, who I just love, he was the chairman of the Highway Commission in the mid-'80s, and litter was a real problem. So he was sitting there, and just like, you know, a lot of bureaucracies, they came in and they gave, he was hearing the, you know, this is what transportation cost is. And then the litter guys came in and says, well, litter is up 17% again, Commissioner, so we need a 17% increase in our budget. And he stopped and put his glasses on his nose, and he looked down, and he said, has anybody ever thought about, like, reducing litter? Like, the room was silent. So they went on an RFP, and my partner, Tim McClure, Jim and the M and GSD&M, we were pitching the business, and one day he came in and he said, I got it. He said, we don't have trash, you know, we don't have litter on our highways, we have trash. And he wrote the line, Don't Mess with Texas. We pitched the business. It was very controversial. But what we did, Chris, in a sense, it was our first lesson in laddering up to a higher purpose. We didn't even know we were doing this. We got out of the litter business and got into the pride business and didn't even know it. And at that moment in time, we didn't increase any fines. We didn't pass any friggin' laws. We didn't try to regulate it. We got celebrities like Willie and Jerry Jeff Walker and the Cowboys and the Houston Oilers back then, the Rockets, and we had commercials, the Hell's Angels in Tyler, Texas, and we said, "Don't mess with Texas," and it became the most recognized theme, not only here but damn near around the world. And a lot of it was because the former mayor of Houston, Bob Lanier, was there, and he inspired people to reduce litter. If we had more leaders in politics, instead of trying to legislate behavior, let's go out there and appeal to people's best instincts. Consumers want to change. They want the things to work. Put the consumers in charge, and it's amazing.
You're listening to Motley Fool Money. We're talking with Roy Spence, author of It's Not What You Sell, It's What You Stand For. Roy, what's the biggest misconception about marketing?
I think the biggest misconception about marketing is it looks like it's some kind of gimmick. It's some kind of spin. And the truth of the matter is, I believe this. Commerce does not happen unless somebody sells something to someone else. And whether it was a street vendor that came over from, you know, Italy when we first started this country, we are in the business of commerce, and in this miracle of America. And I think the misconception of marketing is it's some kind of, you know, and when we are at our worst, by the way, consumers are right, we're spin doctors. When we're at our best, we're trying, especially with purpose-based companies, and that's why it's so important to hear this message. If you are really in the business of improving people's lives and you don't tell consumers about it, you're cheating them out of an opportunity to improve their life. And I know that sounds a bit whatever, but I believe it. Now, there are a lot of companies out there who are just trying to sell stuff. I got it. They're not going to be in business, by the way. But if you are genuinely, your intent, you're honorable, you actually have leaders who are purpose-based, then marketing allows you to bring to life that improvement to the marketplace. So I think the biggest misconception is, and by the way, advertising and marketing people bring it on ourselves, is that we're spin doctors. And when we're at our worst, that's what we do. But when we're at our best, we connect life improvement products with lives. That's a good line. I never thought of it. We connect life improvement products with lives. And that's when we're at our best. That's what we do.
Roy, before we let you get out of here, I've got to wrap up with a quick round of buy, sell, or hold.
Okay.
Let's start with, well, the British Open is going on. So buy, sell, or hold the future of the Tiger Woods brand.
I would put it on hold. I would sure not sell it.
All right, let's move over to politics. Buy, sell, or hold the possibility that former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich runs for president.
I would do a buy on that one.
Buy, sell, or hold the possibility that Secretary of State Hillary Clinton runs for president in the future.
I can't comment on that. I'm too close to it. But that was good. That was good, buddy.
You know, finally, we'll close with one that's also pretty close to you. University of Texas football team has won at least 10 games in each of the last 9 seasons. That's the longest streak in the country. So buy, sell, or hold the likelihood the Longhorns win at least 10 games this fall.
Buy, go to Las Vegas, go to Texas Hold'em, and go all in. that's why they call it Texas Hold'em. Go all in, buy.
It is a bestseller for a reason. The book is It's Not What You Sell, It's What You Stand For. Roy Spence, you're one of the best. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Chris, thank you. Well, I'm sure proud of you guys. I'm sure glad you got a Houston station. That's really terrific. You got a good foothold into Texas, and y'all are terrific. So I always enjoy visiting with you.
The stars at night are big and bright, deep in the heart of Texas. The prairie sky is wide and high, deep in the heart of Texas. The coyotes wail along the trail, deep in the heart of Texas. The rabbits rush around the brush, deep in the heart of Texas.
Coming up, we'll give an official welcome to our newest station, and we'll give you an inside look at the stocks that are on our radar. And as always, we want to hear from you. Drop us an email at radio@fool.com. Give us your thoughts on the BP situation. Give us your thoughts on Texas. Whether you've messed with Texas or not, drop us an email, radio@fool.com. Stick around. You're listening to Motley Fool Money.
Here's Dr. Stephen Ondra, Senior Health Advisor to the Secretary, VA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Health IT, sponsored by McAfee.
I think that as health IT helps transform healthcare in this country, health IT itself will also be transformed. I don't believe that the way we're looking at health IT today is going to be the way that we use it and tools that we have tomorrow.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Federal IT organizations and prime contractors are experiencing a rapid rise in cybersecurity threats and compliance requirements. McAfee is the standard throughout federal, military, intelligence, and civilian enterprises worldwide. McAfee's capabilities are essential to keeping federal agencies ahead of the latest cyber threats. To learn more about how McAfee can help your organization combat cybersecurity threats, please call 1-888-VIRUS-NO or go to McAfee.com/government.
I'm Howard Lewis, one of 10 million Americans who is blind or has a significant disability. I'm a records manager, environmental technician, or warehouse manager.
Nearly 70% of Americans with disabilities do not have jobs. No matter the economic climate, there's little change in this staggering unemployment rate. The Ability One program works to lower that number by creating jobs for people who are blind or have significant disabilities, and we're doing it without federal tax subsidies. Ability One. Find out more at AbilityOne.org.
Attention AFGE members, government, and military employees looking for a hassle-free way to buy a new computer, electronics, or home appliances. Purchasing Power allows you to get items such as Dell laptops, HP desktops, and Kenmore appliances through easy payroll deduction. Purchase any laptop from July 15th through August 15th and receive a free custom skin. Get started today. Log on to shoppurchasingpower.com. That's shoppurchasingpower.com.
AFGE members are eligible for a 6% members only discount.
When you're trying to find answers to tough problems, you need the best minds you can find. Our company, TASC, helps some of the U.S. government's most crucial agencies solve complex challenges. TASC is looking for intelligent men and women to put their best thinking to work for great causes like peace, freedom, safety, and security for all Americans. To learn how you can join our smart and visionary team, please visit TASC.com. That's TASC.com. TASC is an equal opportunity employer. U.S. citizenship is required for most positions.
Federal news and information just got more fun and interesting. Amy Morris joins Tom Temin on The Federal Drive, weekday mornings from 6 to 10. Tom and Amy tailor their show for Feds on the Go with usable information from trustworthy and seasoned journalists. You're going to learn, but they also might make you laugh. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
We've all got money questions. Will I have enough to retire when I want? Am I saving enough for my kids' college education? When should I start taking Social Security? How can I help my aging parents with their finances? Is it too late to refinance my mortgage? The Garrett Planning Network can help you answer all of these questions and more. The Garrett Planning Network is a group of more than 300 fee-only financial planners and advisors. They're independent, they don't work on commission, and you won't be turned away just because you're not wealthy. It's pay-as-you-go, as-needed financial advice on your terms. So whether you're looking for a comprehensive financial plan or just a second opinion, your local Garrett planner can help. And for a limited time, listeners of the show can get a free Get Acquainted meeting and a 10% discount. Just mention The Motley Fool when you contact them. To learn more, go to GarrettPlanningNetwork.com. That's with two R's and two T's. GarrettPlanningNetwork.com.
Well, baby, what I couldn't do with plenty of money and you, in spite of the worry that money brings, just a little filthy lucre buys a lot of.
As always, people on the program, they have interest in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy or sell stocks based solely on what you hear. I'm Chris Hill, and back in the studio with me, our trio of senior analysts, Seth Jason, James Early, and Shannon Zimmerman. Guys, welcome back, and it's my favorite part of the show where we actually get to welcome a new affiliate station in Houston, Texas, Talk Radio 650, and I think it's safe to say that no one is more excited about our new affiliate than Houston native and Motley Fool Money producer Matt Greer.
Yeah.
I mean, just...
I love Houston.
Houston, oh, you know what? See, it's a good thing there's a really thick door separating, you know, you from Mac, because mispronouncing Houston is just, that's just not the way to go. We were talking earlier in the show about the iPhone 4 and all of the fun that Apple is having with their press conference and all that sort of thing. But left undiscussed so far was the release of Droid X that came out earlier this week as well.
If it is not an iPhone, why would I want it? I'm doing the bears. Yeah, it's an enormous phone. Greer over there is very excited to get one of these. It's about the size of an Eggo waffle, but it's a real leap ahead, and it shows one of the challenges for Apple, which is that when they release sort of one phone per year, the rest of the phone industry is always busy putting the newest technology into the phone, so they're always a little behind on the hardware curve.
If only they could get ahead of on the interface curve, they would maybe come out ahead.
Yeah, and that was the thing with the Droid X. I looked at it and thought this is interesting, but then I had to do a bunch of homework to see how Motorola's skin compared to the one in the HTC phones, and yep, it was just too confusing, and I decided that I would take a nap.
Apparently, though, it does grant three wishes, even if one of those wishes is for an iPhone 4.
And I have to claim ignorance, because it was only in the last couple of days that I realized where they got the name Droid. And why don't we just bring in Steve Broido again here, because he was pretty passionate about this. Steve, would you like to explain to the folks at home where the name Droid comes from?
I believe it was licensed from George Lucas.
That's right.
From Star Wars.